Welcome to your new Hollywood. You get it? Got it? Good.
Welcome to the show, everyone. This is Gabrielle, and I'd like to welcome you to episode 24. Hi, Kia.
Hey, Gabrielle. We have a great show today.
We do.
We say that all the time. I think all of our shows are great, but I do. I'm particularly excited about this one.
I am too. You know, I'll do this quickly. Back when we did our episode called The British Are Coming, we had a moment there when we tapped on the show Harry's Law. I'm not quite sure how it snuck its way into our conversation, but we were chatting about how much we were really enjoying the storyline that was taking place between an actor by the name of Amal Amin and Brittany Snow. And in the show, I sort of dropped and said, wouldn't it be funny if that guy that's playing in this was British? And Dan looked it up and he said, he's British.
I remember. I'm with you, though. I have no idea how that show crept in.
But we were really kind of blown away by the performance that this young man was giving. And you know what? I wrote on my wish list, Amal Amin. Guess who our guest is today?
Amal Amin.
Yes. It's Amal Amin, and I'm so excited because he sounds wonderful. We had a great conversation with him a few days back, and he sounds really psyched to be on the show.
He does. Based on our pre-interview, I think he's going to be a wealth of knowledge.
I do. And I think, you know, yet again.
And entertaining.
He's going to be entertaining. And as we all know, I am quite obsessed with, you know, actors across the pond. So it's going to be good because we're going to get an inside look at, you know, what it's like being a working actor over in the UK. So I'm excited about that.
I am. I am very excited. I think it's going to be fantastic. I'm going to have to work on my British accent, though.
I'm not even going to give it a go.
What?
No, I used to try. I used to throw that down a lot, and I sounded Scottish.
If you're going to live over there at some point, you need to kind of hone in on that.
The last thing you need to do as an American is go over there and try and throw down a British accent. They will escort you to Heathrow and send you the heck on back home. We're excited. Sit down, pull out your coffee, chill out in Starbucks, you know, bring your morning run to like a slow jog, because we're going to get on the phone with Amal Amin. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Again, I love those musical breaks, Kia. It gives us time to pull ourselves together.
And we do need that time.
Get everything situated.
Always.
Introduce our guests to the madness and then get right into it. Well, as promised, everybody, we have on the show the great, the man who can cry in 30 seconds, I kid you not, Amal Amin. Welcome to the show, Amal.
Thank you very much. What an introduction. 30 seconds cry. I don't know. That was when I was younger. I think I might be out of touch now with my emotions. We get a bit more slippery. Thanks for having me on the show, guys. I appreciate it, man. It's really, really cool that you reached out to me. It's nice.
I think it's really cool that you responded. So I want to thank you, and I want to thank Emmy, and I want to thank Tammy Rosen. I want to thank all three of you for coming through. So thank you so much.
Let's thank all five of us right now.
Okay. I want to thank you, Kia.
Thank you, Kia. Thank you, Gabrielle.
It's like, good night, John Boy.
Yeah.
Do you know the Waltons?
Yeah, of course. I remember that. Thank you, Gabrielle. Thank you, Kia. Thank you, Sammy. Thank you for me. Thanks, Mikel. Yes.
love it.
You are very welcome. But you know what? I'm going to have to say this. I feel a little gypped because you have done quite a big body of work in the United Kingdom since you've been working since you were 7 years old. And there's a ton of series and films that you've done that we in the United States have not been able to see. So now we have you, thank goodness. I guess, you know, after sort of reviewing your whole life story, which is in YouTube, just so you know, if you, you know, ever need a reference for your whole life, what is it that brought you to the United States?
Well, it's a big question a lot of actors are, it's very spoken about subject right now, why people are leaving England to come to Los Angeles. But mine started very, very young. You know, I was 6 years old, and I've always wanted to be... like an American movie star. You know, that was my dream from very early age. And I was sent to stage school for 10 years. And I'm there, you know, I gained my grounding. But we'll go over that later. So I've always wanted to come here. It's always in my destination to be in America. From when the movie stars I grew up watching were American. I grew up on American films. You know, I grew up on the James Cagney films, the James Stewart films, you know, I grew up on those type of films, you know, old musicals like Stormy Weather and Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. And you know, the movies that as I grew a bit, you know, a bit older, and until when I say older, like 8 and 9 was, you know, Home Alone. You know, I was inspired by Macaulay Culkin. I wanted to do what he did. You know, The Goonies, all these great young movies and all the people I looked up to were American. Being British at that time, there was no one from a youthful perspective that I could identify with. So as I got older, you know, Will Smith became someone of a template for me, and Denzel Washington, and you know, and as I've gotten even more older, you know, people like De Niro, and then you go back to people like, you know, Marlon Brando, and then because I'm a filmmaker, you know, so I've always been desperate to be in America, desperate to have a career over here. You know, it's been the vision and the dream of mine, and that's why I decided to take the leap. In 2010, I had an opportunity to. I was flown out here after putting myself on tape for a TV show. They flew me out here. I did something called a test. I'd never known what a studio test was before. Mm-hmm. So I did a studio test in pilot season, and that they passed me, and then I went to network, and that particular job didn't go my way. And so I was left in Los Angeles, you know, in my hotel room, having flown over, you know, business class, limousine, dropping me to the Sheraton Hotel in Universal, and then testing for the show. And it's just high. And I'm like, my God, is it happening? And it didn't. Mm. It didn't. And I was a bit, you know, I was very crushed, you know. So only a few times in my life where career-wise I've been, you know, oh, my God, you know, that's, you know, been crushed about something. Cause I tend to be quite a positive person and picks myself up a lot. But I was really crushed for those 24 hours when, you know, people are calling the casting director saying, you know, you did a great job and, you know, please, you know, come back again next year. And, you know, and I just thought to myself, with the help of my manager, Tammy Rosen, you know, we came to the conclusion, you know, next year is just not good enough for us right now.
Oh, right now.
Yeah. You know, and I went from a perspective of, oh, I really want to be here, to I'm going to earn being here, and with myself earning it and going to every room and with the power I have to affect the casting directors, affect the directors, affect the producers, at least I'm going to walk away with my name ringing out as who's this young actor who's hungry, who's focused, who really wants it. And literally 10 days later, when my flight out, they kicked me out of the hotel. They didn't kick me out, but my hotel was done. And 10 days later, I auditioned for a show called Kindreds, which became Harry's Law. And I was one of the first people cast for that 10 days later. Wow. So it's, you know, people said to me, you know, you don't understand how much of a story that is to come here. And basically within 13 days of being in Los Angeles, get a part, you know?
Well, it is incredible. And now this was during pilot season, correct?
Pilot season 2010. It was, you know, it's very early in pilot season, you know?
Right, yeah. So you auditioned for the pilot. You got casted. You did the pilot. And then once it was picked up by the network, you made it all the way to the series.
And, yeah. You know, it was David E. Kelly, who I grew up watching Ally McBeal with my mom, so I loved his stuff. And it was Kathy, beautiful, wonderful Bates, you know, who she's always supported me as an actor, and you know, she was so encouraging from the first day I got onto set. Beautiful woman. And so it was magic. I'm the sort of person that I believe in the intangibles, and I believe in, you know, effort plus having the ability to dream, you know, because some people, dreaming is scary for some people when reality bites, you know?
Yep.
So having the audaciousness to dream, it felt good. It felt really good. And, I'm lucky. I was very lucky, but also it's been 25 years, or it was like 24 years in the making when I first came here. So it's a beautiful experience and time.
I was watching an interview that Aaron Johnson did with one of his co-stars for Kick-Ass, and he was describing the audition process in the United States as, at times, being kind of soul-crushing. It kind of just whips the passion out of acting, in a way. Did you ever get that feeling?
Unfortunately, I didn't. My experience was very quick, and I got the huge... It's like... Tyson got in the ring with me. I said, Tyson, I can challenge you. And Tyson, they fly me out, and I'm ready to fight Tyson in Vegas. And Tyson just goes, bang, just straight in my face, knocks me out for six. And then I got to get up and say to myself, do you know what? I got to start up in, like, you know, fighting the guys that are a little less tough than Tyson. So my endurance from my experience in life and disappointments and picking myself up is really, you know, it's good. You know, obviously Aaron Johnson's in a nice place in his career. But, you know, that was his experience. I get what he's saying, though. You know, going to auditions and it not happening is crushing for any actor, especially when you've been at it for so long and it's not happening. And especially, the worst thing to ever ask of an actor, the worst question is like, oh, so, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing now? You know, that's the question that actors don't want to answer, because sometimes we ain't doing nothing, you know what I mean?
You know, that's the common question in L.A. I mean, no matter what you do, it's like, what are you doing now?
What are you working on? You know what I'm saying? I'm working on getting a damn job. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No,
but,
totally.
But, I mean, that question inspired me to do every single thing that came that I do other than acting to do with the entertainment industry. So I'm able to answer that question and feel comfortable within myself as a person. And that question for me was answered all the way back. Because I did in England, I did a lot of work. I was in a very cult classic film called Kid Altered, which people in Europe love and some Americans have heard about. And then I was in a TV show for a couple of years as one of the stars of a cop show called The Bill. And I did a lot of work after that. And then it came to a point where I thought to myself, the jobs that I'm now going to be getting offered are being a little bit recycled. It's a little bit the same of what I've been doing. And I thought to myself, I went to my agent in the UK late 2009. I was like, you know what? Not 2008. And I said to her, I want to go to America. And she said, you know, you've got to be out there with a name of this and that. And I'm someone that does my best in life to ignore the rules where it suits me, in terms of not rules that don't hurt people, but the rules of how people think things should be done. Because I think people have done wonderful things and just... it's because they've been ignorant of the rules. And I think my ignorance of the rules has really helped me. My ignorance of how long should it take for you to succeed as an actor or get a job or a pilot in Hollywood? It should take 2 or 3 years of pilot season. And my attitude was, I didn't even know that. So it was to my benefit, you know? And I've kind of taken that attitude of things. And so that developed my attitude of wanting to be a filmmaker, saying, do you know what? I don't want to wait around for someone to do the roles, create the roles and tell the stories that I love, that I'm passionate about, especially from a UK perspective, because you guys as an entertainment industry are much further along than us as an entertainment industry. You know, where are my Goonies? Where's my Wonder Years? You know, from a young youthful perspective, UK, or from a black perspective, UK. So I'm just like, you know what? Let me get onto it, do my best, write what I have to do, try and tell my stories, get people interested, and make things happen. And I'm still in that place. I'm in the zone right now of lining up all my ducks. I'm in the dungeon, lining up all my ducks, and just waiting for that gate to open. And God willing, it's just going to be bat, 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 bat. You know?
Well, and something's going to happen, because you are literally writing, producing, acting, and we're going to, in our second segment, we're going to talk a great deal about your production company, your acting school. That's what I said, acting school, people. And excuse me, all the other projects you're working on. But before we leave this discussion, at least in terms of being on a network series, you have done a great body of work in the UK. And actually, I watched a few episodes of The Bill. Quick side question. Your character was shot, fatally shot, or was he shot and then taken out of the force and moved somewhere else? I'm dying to know.
So Lewis Hardy, basically, is this young rookie cop who was from the street. He came into the police force saying, you know, I can make a change. You know, I've come from this background, but I want to remain myself and be in the establishment. And he has a cousin that has a really shady past. So basically, he, towards the end of when I said I wanted to leave, they create this great storyline for me where I go undercover to get my cousin out of this kind of explosive gang situation. So I go undercover. I'm just about to save my cousin, and the guy, it's a bit like a Donnie Brasco or one of those things. One of the guys that took me on board as one of his friends realized I'm betraying him because I'm undercover, and he tries to shoot me, and he shoots me or Lewis in the chest. Everybody thinks he's going to die. I'm telling you, when this was out in London, it was like, oh, my God.
You just described how I felt when I was watching it the other day. I'm looking all over YouTube trying to find what happens, and I'm like, oh, my God, what happens?
Right. And so, like, I remember seeing, I'm going to finish the story, but I remember seeing the advert for it. It's like, next time on The Bill. And I remember seeing that episode. It was like my last two episodes. I remember watching the advert for it. They made it look all sexy. I got up from my mum's couch. I opened my front door and I ran all the way around my street and came back into the house. Like, woo! It looks good. Yes! You know what I mean? That feeling. So I was really happy. But basically, Lewis gets shot. He doesn't die, and he transfers to a special unit that focuses on black crime, like getting black crime out of, like it's called Trident in the UK, black gun crime. And so, that was his end, you know. And they always wanted to keep me around because they thought about bringing me back, but the show doesn't exist anymore, so that never happened.
Like what you're listening to? Then shoot an email to podcast@yougetitgotitgood.com or leave a comment on our blog at yougetitgotitgood.com.
Going through the series process in the UK, you're going through the United States. How does it differ in the UK when you are auditioning for a television series? Like, do you have to go through the test? Does network have to approve it? You know, do you have to do the whole rigmarole, or is it a smoother process?
No, you haven't got as many people to sign off on you. You know, over here in the States, you have producers and then the studio and the network sign off on who they like. So it's a much longer process here to actually get cast in something. In England, it's generally, you know, you have the producers of the show and the producers of the show basically get the final say. And that process happens over two or three auditions, depending on whether or not you are a name or established on the, you know, you either go straight to the producer session or not. But yeah, it's kind of the same. It's just a bit more daunting in America for a British actor because it's like, you know, there's so many things that have nothing to do with what you're going to be doing. And I think as an actor is what I mean. And I think with an American, because it's such a business, they have so much to consider. Whereas in England, I think it's a business, but I think sometimes craft rules over, you know, what name you are. Because we don't have movies. Well, we're only just building our movie stars in England now, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot more of a, it's a little bit more of a daunting experience, testing and all of that. And I understand anybody that says that, because once you audition, then you get a recall, and then you do a studio, and you're flipping, hearts pumping, because you know this one thing could change your life and send it in a direction that you've been wanting. And to be honest, the greatest advice I could give to anybody is that, you know, you've got to really just do your best to be present, be in the moment, and every audition, let it go. Like, just let it go once you leave that room. The success of you as an actor shouldn't come from you getting the job. It should, I mean, it does, to be honest, but it should come from you, the what you can control, which is going in that room and delivering yourself at your best and knowing that and leaving. It, you know, this game takes a real toll on you, and it's very character building if you allow it to be, or it can be very detrimental to your character. So, you know, you've just got to allow yourself to, you just got to allow yourself to breathe and just go in there, do your best and let it go. You know, that's why, because I'm a bit of a control freak, a bit OCD, that's why I'm very interested in becoming a producer and a filmmaker. So I have things in my hands a lot more. Mm-hmm.
You know? I think, too, what happens, you know, from the casting's perspective here, once, because I've seen, you know, actors in the waiting room and they're good and they're in their zone and they're ready and they come in and they just, the adrenaline has kicked in on overdrive. And I can't stress enough, you know, especially to my students and they're younger, you know, once you're in that room, that's your time. Like, forget about who's waiting. Forget about who came in before you. Like, that's your time. That's your moment. And I think it's so important.
I think you're 100% right. And I tell you what, I didn't learn that until my girlfriend really said to me, you know, she said, when you go into the audition, you know, that is your moment. You know, they're waiting for you, mm-hmm. you know. But their time, it's your time, it's your show. And I remember casting director also her saying, actually saying, casting directors are on your side.
Exactly.
I've always looked at these people as the enemy, like, for
exactly.
Real.
We want you to book the job.
Yeah, because your job's on the line as well, you know.
Exactly.
So it's very. You want us to at least be good, you know. Someone has to get the job, but you know your opinion is very important. Your job is resting on your opinion. If someone fumbles, it looks bad on the casting director. And I've never, ever taken that perspective, and I think a lot of actors don't either. You know, casting directors are on your side. I'm going to tweet that later on, actually.
Oh, you should.
I'll say, Kia said, casting directors.
I know. Yes, we are on your side. We are truly on your side, and I don't think a lot of people realize that. So I definitely need you to tweet that and to just keep saying it, because it's so true. I'm like, I want someone to book this job, you know. Because if you're going in on auditions and you're kind of on the circuit and it happened a lot quicker for you than other people, you know, that go to L.A. or New York. But, you know, you start to know the actors very well, you know. Yeah. And I know the ones that work hard and that, you know, are really ready. And I want them to succeed.
So let me ask you a question. What do the conversations sound like behind closed doors regarding like young actors when so say for example I come in, I'm one of the hardworking ones, what is the conversations that said, and how much power do you have in actually pushing someone forward for the job?
Well, I think it all depends on what project it is, you know, because of course there are going to be, you know, there are some producers like Scorsese who he uses pretty much the same casting director all the time. So I think they have a pretty good relationship where she could probably, you know, push, you know, a lot harder than some other casting directors probably could. For me in particular, it really is a relationship thing with the producers. And there's a way to kind of push that, because from my experience, producers really don't want to be told what to do, you know, yeah. Or writers or directors. Like, no one wants to be told. They all have their vision and they all know what they want and what they're looking for. My job, I feel like, is to make sure you're getting what that is, and then also making sure that I'm bringing you something that's going to make you think differently.
Kia, do you ever have a bias to what actor you would like to get the job?
Yes.
That's a good answer. Thank you for being honest. Yes. Why?
Again, those are, I'm a relationship person.
Right.
Which is the reason why I teach now, because you know, working for Nickelodeon for 10 years, part of our job was casting, and then the other part was talent relations. So we cast a project, and then once you become a talent on our air, we then manage you from a talent relations perspective. So, you know, we attend news events with you, parades, promo shoots, you know, you name it. So we form those relationships. And for me, I form relationships. Like, I like relationships. I'm very honest in my sessions. You know, if I feel like, I'll turn the camera off and I'll say, hey, you know what, just take a minute, go outside, get your thoughts together, come back in. Like, I will do that for someone. And to me, it's all about those relationships. I'm not sure if it's right or wrong, but I really can't see doing my job any other way.
Yes. And a lot of the times when someone doesn't get the job, it's about what at the end of the day?
Well, that's a great part about casting. And that's why I encourage my students in particular to not focus so much on why they didn't get the job, because I don't really think you'll ever know. I mean, it's one of those things where there's so many variables.
Oh God, there's so many.
If it's a situation where I've got a family to cast and I absolutely love this kid, but the dad is extremely hard to find, I may have to sacrifice the kid in order to find a really good dad, because the dad that we need doesn't match the kid that we love.
Mm.
You know what I mean? But the dad is more important in terms of the structure of the material and the concept and all of that. So that's one variable. I mean, hair color. I mean, you know, those are some of the more shallow ones, but sometimes it comes down to that. Sometimes it comes down to, I've even been in sessions where I've had amazing actors come in and the director or producer is like, oh, well, they remind me of such and such. And you cannot get that out their head. Mm-hmm. Whoever such and such is, they were not feeling them, whether it was an ex-girlfriend or a movie star that they don't like or whatever. But it's fascinating to watch that happen. And I'm like, but they're amazing. So, and you know.
My last question, because this is becoming your interview.
I know. Well, welcome to the Amel and Gabrielle show. Kia, you've been given the axe.
How often do people look for people that remind them of stars that already exist? Like this person, I've already heard it. Like this is the next Tom Cruise, or you know, this is the. Do they look for the quality of acting?
I think that initially when they put out a breakdown or when a character kind of is developed, I think pretty much everybody has some prototype in mind.
Yes.
You know, I think that's just an honest thing to say. Like there's an idea of who they are looking for. I'm looking for a young Natalie Portman. I'm looking for a young such and such. And sometimes that's, you know, I even see that on a breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what happens is, to me, the most rewarding experience is when, after a few sessions, you can kind of, you see that image or that idea kind of just melt away and they start going for the performances, because actors come in and give you a performance that you hadn't expected, or that it truly brings your material to life in a way that you just didn't envision that it would.
Yeah. I was talking to a casting director and she said the most brilliant thing is when people come in and change minds, you know?
Oh, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's why I said you have three opportunities. You are exactly what they're looking for. Like, you fit the breakdown to a T. Actually, there's two opportunities. You fit the breakdown to a T. You are nothing like what we've envisioned and, you know, totally not right. And then you're nothing like what we've envisioned, but there's something about what you bring to the table that makes us rethink what we thought to be true. Mm-hmm. So to me, you have two out of three opportunities to book this job.
Yes.
Which is good odds. If you can just stay in the moment, like you said, stay in the moment and commit to what you're doing in that room and realize that it's your time and they're there. If you come in prepared, the worst thing is to come in not prepared.
Hmm.
To me, that's when I just don't even have, I can't even talk to you anymore.
And I think he has just tapped on it, because speaking as someone who was on the network side, you know, the one common thread that, say you come in and you bust it out as an actor, you give the performance of your life. You may not look anything like the character they're looking for. You may not fit the vision of the producer. But that one common thread that's going to travel through all the conversations that you have with, you know, the creative directors, the people in marketing, you know, the production company, the director is, but they're so good.
Mm-hmm.
But they're so good. They gave that, you know, but they gave such a great performance. Then you go to the meeting with, you know, the vice president in charge of the network, and you have the same discussion. And if that can be tapped on at almost every meeting you go to, your chances may be really strong.
Yeah.
You know, it's, they may be really strong, but there are other obstacles that get thrown at you in terms of the decision-making. And what people should know that when a network is making that decision, it's them saying, what does this department think? What does this department think? What does this person think?
Yeah,
there's so many different things that come into the decision-making. It can be overwhelming.
And if you've made it that far to the decision-making phase where you've got, you know, marketing involved and online and, you know, producers and all of this, if you made it that far, you can best be sure that you've done something right.
You can. But, you know, it's hard, I think, though, for actors to look at the big picture because they've been honing in on their craft. They've been waiting for that moment. They've gone in that room and they've given the performance of their life, hopefully so. But the one thing, and I think actually it's kind of a relief in a sense that they don't have to think about the other 43 some odd series that are in pilot stage and what actors those pilots are picking and choosing and how all the stories are intersecting. And if the talent that that show has look or resemble the talent that you're casting for your show, it's a nightmare.
For me, becoming like I've done casting with hundreds and hundreds of people,
mm-hmm.
films I've done in London and stuff. And I get it. You know, sometimes it's something very trivial. Sometimes it can be something way that is not within your control. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was a choice between these two guys my short film, Drink Drugs and KFC, and this character, Skipper, who was a lively guy. Now, I was casting from America because I was living in America, and there was my three casting directors at the time. They, like, two of them went one way, one of them went that way, and because they were all saying, the two of them were saying, this person is exactly like the character Amel has written on page. And then the other casting director, she said, however, this person brings something out. And I remember the two head casting directors did not want me to see the team of that the assistant casting director said I should see. And as soon as I did see that tape, I went with the person that brought something to the character that I had no idea even existed, you know?
Was Skipper the heavyset character?
Yes, the heavyset brother. Yeah. Fantastic to me.
I loved him. I thought he was great. You did a right... Good choice.
Okay. Here's the last question. This is Britain versus America in terms of auditioning. Now, in England, we are taught it's okay, and there's an emphasis on knowing your lines and putting the paper down, whereas in the States... It's been alluded to me that gives out the wrong signals. What do you think here as a casting director?
I think that if you are coming in for a pre-screen, you are more than welcome to have your sides in your hand. If you're coming in for a callback, I am a fan of being off book, but not off book to the point where you've memorized exactly how you're going to deliver your lines. Off book to the point where you know your lines, but you're still open and receptive to listening, reacting, and adapting to whatever happens in the room.
Yes.
Which is hard for people, but that to me is what you need to do. Because I feel like if you know your lines, then you're not concentrating on, okay, I say this, they say this. I say, you know,
Between having the technique of knowing your lines, but also the technique of having character and being open and being responsive and creating something together with the other person.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is hard because think about it, you haven't worked with this. You're essentially as prepared as you are, it's a cold read because you've never read with this person before.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, so that's...
Sometimes the read is terrible.
Absolutely. Because for sometimes even when I'm coaching people or putting people on tape, it takes me, I'm like, let's run it a couple of times because I need to feel what you're doing in order to really kind of know what I'm doing.
Yes.
And I think that, that's how I see it. I'll tell you that, and I've told Gabrielle before, we had one woman and it was for a movie. She came in and she had her lines and she put them down. And it was a pre-screen. I said, hey, I was like, you're more than welcome to hold your lines. She said, no, I'm good. I got it. And then she started and she messed up. So she grabbed, you know, a little sneak peek, looked at him again. I'm like, you know, you can hold your lines. Nope, I got it. She did it four times.
I know an actor that did that as well.
Yeah, she did it four times. I don't think I will ever see her again. And she was an adult. And I'm like, you did that for... Because now what you're showing me is that you don't follow directions. Like, you don't listen and you don't follow directions. Because I'm telling you, and again, going circling back to what you said, we're not there to hurt you or against you. I'm going to tell you something that's going to make you better. And for you to choose not to do that because your pride or you thought you had it prepared or it looks bad to have your paper in your hand, I'm like, she didn't listen. And I can't imagine a 40-year-old, some, you know, 40-year-old person on set not listening.
Hey peeps, Gabrielle here. If you're enjoying listening to the show, we'd love it if you'd follow us on Twitter. We're at U, the letter U, get it, got it, good. And we'd love to hear your show ideas, questions, or comments. Feel free to email us. We're at podcast@yougetitgotitgood. Okay, I'm out. Enjoy the rest of the show. Well, it seems that Amel put you on the spot, Derek.
I had no idea I was going to have to answer some questions.
I think it's refreshing, don't you?
I do, and I'm glad that he did that because I think it's really important to, as an actor, to be informed in all aspects of the business. And well, clearly he's someone who likes to be informed and knows that it's helpful to be informed.
Truly. And how often does the reporter get asked questions during
exactly,
an interview?
Exactly. See, peeps,
that's why you need to be listening to us, because we have the tables turned here.
How did I do, by the way? Pretty good?
I think you're good. I couldn't tell whether you were sweating or not, but, you know, you held up.
Yeah, maybe just a little bit. No, he's really, really good. I'm looking forward to continuing our conversation with him.
I am, too. I'm looking forward to the next part of our interview with Amel next week. And you really should tune in, people, because we get to turn the tables on him and put him on the spot with a little-known show called Entourage. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, we want to thank everyone for taking the time to listen to us. Please, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to email us. We're at podcast@yougetitgotitgood. Once again, thanks to Amel, and we'll see you next week.
Part 2.